Welcome to the Kindling's Muse podcast, an intelligent, imaginative, hospitable exploration of ideas that matter in contemporary life. And now, here's your host, Dick Staub.
Hi, this is Dick Staub with another encore presentation of The Dick Staub Show, conversations with thoughtful creatives and cultural influencers about their life, work, and personal journey. Today, a conversation with George Smoot about his book, Wrinkles in Time.
On April 23, 1992, a Berkeley astrophysicist announced that a NASA satellite had detected the biggest and oldest objects anywhere. Stephen Hawking called it the scientific discovery of the century, if not all time. There's a glowing testimonial right there, ladies and gentlemen. The astrophysicist who made the discovery was George Smoot, a researcher at the Lawrence Berkeley Lab, a member of at the Center for Particle Astrophysics and the Space Sciences Laboratory. And with Kie Davidson, he has written a book, Wrinkles in Time, published by Morrow. And he has gained a lot of fame nationally through making a statement, which we'll get into a little bit later, early after he had announced his discovery, that he had seen the face of God, which got him a lot of interesting letters from scientists and religious types and everybody else in between. George, it's really nice to have you with us today.
Thank you. I'm pleased to be here.
It's an amazing thing to have Stephen Hawking say this is the scientific discovery of the century. And as a matter of fact, in your publicity packet, you were described as the Indiana Jones of cosmology. I mean, what exactly were you searching for?
What we were looking for was two things. The primary thing was the seeds of all the structure we see. When we look at the universe today, we see there are stars, and the stars are collected in galaxies, and the galaxies are often collected in clusters. And there are clusters of clusters, and sometimes even bigger structure, things hundreds of millions of light years across, containing tens of thousands, hundreds of thousands of galaxies. And we wanted to know where that came from, because all the early measurements we had showed the early universe was as uniform as we could measure it. And so we knew there had to be some seeds, things that structures were going to grow from in order to become what we see today. But it also turns out that what we see is evidence from what happened during the creation of all of space and time. The creation of the universe itself.
Now, the fact that you use the word seeds implies that you believe that things are growing, and that how widespread was that belief prior to this discovery that there were seeds, a cosmic seeds out there from which all things had ultimately grown?
Well, since 1965, we've had one predominant theory of cosmology, how the universe began and evolved, and that's the Big Bang theory, and that's the theory that the universe is expanding and cooling, that if you go back in time, the universe is denser and hotter, and the further back you go, the denser and the hotter it was. And we have evidence of that from a number of different things, but the thing that was discovered in 1965 by Penzias and Wilson was that there is this relic radiation, this relic light, ancient light that came from this early time, from the time when the universe was hotter than the sun, and has cooled down ever since. And that is where we decided we would look. We would use this ancient light to make a picture of the early universe. And given the Big Bang theory, the idea was gravity, that is a place where you have slightly more material, it will attract in more material and that will continue to grow. If you had a very physically large extent of extra material, you get a very physically large section, like a cluster of galaxies. If it's smaller, you just get a galaxy. And if it's smaller than that, you get a star. That was the idea we had. And we believed that gravity was the only mechanism we could know of that would make the galaxies and the stars and hold them together.
So where does one look and how does one look for these cosmic seeds?
Well, what after Penzias and Wilson's discovery, which is an interesting discovery, they were working for Bell Telephone Labs, and Bell Telephone had the idea, satellites had been launched just then, that you could send radio signals and telephone signals up to satellites and back to the ground. The only question was, what would be the background? Would there be too much radiation coming from the sky to confuse us? And so they sent Penzias and Wilson out to measure that. And what they found was very quickly that the background was very, very faint. You didn't have to worry. But being careful scientists, they did a really good job. And they found this very small part, just 3 degrees above absolute zero, this extra hum of radiation coming in. And that's a very low temperature. You know, the sun is, 6,000 degrees. The Earth is 300 degrees above absolute zero. This is very small compared to all of that. And yet they managed to find it. And we know now it's a relic from the early phase when the universe was actually much hotter than the sun. And it's that radiation, that's the radiation coming to us from the very distant parts of the universe, that allow us to make a picture of the early universe. When you look at the sun, you're seeing something at 6,000 degrees. If you take a picture right now, you're seeing what the sun looked like 8 minutes ago. You look at a nearby star, it's 4 years away. If you look at a faraway star, like the next galaxy over, it could be a million, 2 million years that it took the light to travel. Here we're looking at light that took 15 billion years to travel to us.
15 billion years.
That's right. A very long time.
A very, very long time. Now, one of the compliments that that reviewers have made about your book is that you've taken something that could be complex and you've made it understandable by mere mortals. And you've also gotten the sense of adventure about science. I mean, you end up in Antarctica. You end up, I'm trying to think of all the other crazy places that you were in, the jungles of South America. How did those different locations play into this search?
It sort of happened by accident and happened by necessity. Because we were on the Earth and we were embedded in the Earth's atmosphere, we ended up needing, as we got better and better measurements, to go to higher and higher altitude to have less and less atmosphere in our way. So we started with ground-based measurements, then we went to mountaintop measurements, then we went to airplanes and then balloons. And so, for example, we got to fly our instruments on the U-2 airplanes, which are very high-altitude airplanes that were used for spying looking down. Now we made them into spies looking up. We flew things on these giant helium balloons. And you can't launch these things from normal environment because what goes up must come down. And so you don't want it falling on a populated area. So you end up going to remote places. And if you want to see the southern hemisphere as well as the northern hemisphere, you're going to end up in South America or Australia or something. It turns out in my case, South America is where we ended up a couple of times. And that's how I ended up in the jungles of Brazil trying to find the lost payload. Likewise, you have to get away from man-made radiation. As we've learned more, as Penzias and Wilson were successful, people broadcast more and more. It turns out the South Pole is a very remote site. There's not much man-made interference. It's also very high. Most people don't know this, but there's almost 2 miles of ice on covering the South
Amazing.
Pole.
Yeah. And it's also very cold.
Very cold.
Bringing back memories.
Except for a couple of 2 days ago when I arrived here in Chicago, it was slightly colder than the South Pole for that particular time, but that was because it's the middle of the summer at the South Pole.
That's amazing. When we come back, we'll find out what was ultimately discovered and what it tells us about the birth of the universe. Our guest is George Smoot. He is the co-author of Wrinkles in Time. Stephen Hawking calls his work the scientific discovery of the century, if not all time.
Join us next time as we continue our conversation with George Smoot regarding his book, Wrinkles in Time. Thank you for listening to The Kindling's Muse. If this program sparks something in you, I invite you to participate at www.thekindlings.com. That's K-I-N-D-L-I-N-G-S. Share this program, tell a friend, or just leave a comment at www.thekindlings.com.